Hello and welcome to our ICFLA teleclass for today, December 4, 2018. My name is Terry Norton and your host for today. We warmly welcome you to this ICFLA teleclass entitled Putting the Wizards to Work with Ann Betts. Today you will learn how to put your clients and your own internal wizards to work to help them find answers, insights, and inspiration. Ann Betts will take us on a lively journey through two key networks in our brains, showing us that sometimes the best way to work is to actually not work at all. Today we have screen share. So if you're joining us via computer, we will be using screen share. You'll find the link to the screen share by going in the email reminder that ICFLA sent out a couple hours ago with your dial-in number and your PIN. Scroll down to just below your PIN and click on the link for the screen share. While you're doing that, I'll tell you a little bit about Ann. Ann is the co-founder of Be Above Leadership and an international speaker and trainer on the intersection of neuroscience, coaching, and human transformation. Ann served as the neuroscience consultant to the Coaches Training Institute, CTI, for many years and provided neuroscience, leadership, and coaching consulting to many other corporations and nonprofits. A certified professional coach for over 15 years, Ann is the author of groundbreaking white paper on brain research and coaching. She contributes to Choice Magazine, Coaching at Work, Coaching World, the ICF, and CTI's blogs, and other coaching and other HR publications. So before we say welcome to Ann, let's all give her a warm hello. Kathy, if you're okay to open up the mics, I'll count to three, and we can all say hello. One, two, three.
Hello, Terry. Hello, Kathy.
All right. Thank you. Welcome, Ann. It's great to have you here. Now we'll turn the mic over to you.
Oh, that was great. What a great hello. Oh, it's so fun to be here. I love doing stuff for the ICFLA because you're so organized and professional with this, and it's just a delight. And I love that we have a wonderful California, United States, and international audience. It's just really, really fun. Talking about putting the wizards to work and a bit about coaching and neuroscience, and that's where we're going today. Let me see where we want to start here. Let me tell you, by the way, if you are watching the screen share and thinking, oh my God, that's cool and useful, or if you're not able to watch the screen share, either way, if you send me an email, which is ann@beaboveleadership.com, it's B-E-A-B-O-V-E leadership.com, send me an email there. I'm happy to put you on our mailing list and send you a PDF of the slides so that you don't have to scribble furiously with everything that I'm saying. If you just want the slides and don't want to be on my mailing list, just let me know. That's fine too. Happy to do so. Just send me an email. All right. Let's see. I love to start with this quote, which says, and I will read everything from the slides, so if you're listening in, you get it as well. But the quote that I have up is, if the human brain were so simple that we could understand it, we would be so simple we couldn't, which is from a man named Emerson Pugh. Which basically, it took me a while to sort of get my head around this, and I thought, oh, well, what he's saying is, basically, if we had this brain that we could actually know what the heck is going on, we would basically sort of be slugs or, you know, very, very simple creatures. We are very, very complex. And I was talking with Terry and Kathy and Gay before the call today, and basically saying it is a never-ending source of fascination. If you want to keep your brain stimulated and always have the next bright, shiny object to think about and wonder about, neuroscience is such a great field to be interested in. And I think that's really why I said it's a way of indulging my inherent somewhat attention deficit challenges, because there is always something new to learn. But that means that, you know, what is evolving is continually moving. And so what I'm going to share with you today is the latest understanding of these two fascinating networks of the brain and how we use them in coaching. And just for you to know, they are a moving target, like everything in neuroscience. But let me go a little bit big picture first and just talk about coaching and neuroscience. So what the heck? It's probably a conversation that in the coaching world is at most about 8 years old. So that's young when you really think about that. It is not a very long-term conversation. Coaching emerged, I would say, somewhat concurrently with neuroscience. Neuroscience as a field, there's a wonderful coach, excuse me, her name is slipping, is evading me right now. She has passed on. She was also a neuroscientist, and she said she was at the first ever like international meeting of neuroscientists, so within her lifetime. Neuroscience as a field continues to grow and expand because our technology gets better. But a lot of what's really fascinating has emerged in the last 50 years. A lot of what we think, you know, we now know, quote, know about the brain is fairly new learning. And so coaching, we know, is 25-something years old. It grew up without, you know, there's, it wasn't, you know, people didn't know about the brain and then say, let's do this coaching process. It was more, here's what works for human beings. Oh, huh, that's fascinating. Let's go try that. Well, that's what got me really intrigued. And I have a deep background in neuroscience. I've studied neuroscience at the graduate level for 8 years now, written about it, taught about it. And one of the things that first intrigued me was, well, what are we doing? Okay, I'm a coach. I've been a coach since 2001. I've been a coach trainer for the Coaches Training Institute for, I don't remember when I started that, 2008, something like that. What are we doing? How do we, you know, what's going on here? And what I really discovered as I went into more studying neuroscience, and my studies were sort of at the beginning of this conversation about 8 years ago, if it works in human development, there will be a reasonably certain brain explanation as to why. There will definitely be some clues in terms of how the brain operates that are showing us why this particular technique works. And that's really fascinating. I'm a bit of a rebel. I'm not a cynic or a skeptic, but I'm a bit, definitely, I, you know, fit the rebel archetype. If anybody's on the call knows me, you will know that that's true. I like to poke at things. I like to stir things up. And so I went into exploring coaching from that perspective, not from the, oh my God, you know, everything must be so perfect, but it was really from this, let me see, can we really justify what we're doing and can I poke some holes in it? And what was really fascinating to me and very, very humbling was that I couldn't. And I've looked at this very much in depth over many years and saying the classic coaching models, the ICF competencies, CTI's model, Coaches Training Institute, which I know the best because I taught it, very, very aligned with neuroscience. And I think that is absolutely wonderful for us as coaches and something we can really trust. Wasn't developed from science, but it is aligned with it. And that's the language you can definitely use. The other thing I started seeing, and I imagine many of you have seen this, and I want to say there's two things about this. My bullet point on my slide says, when we provide a scientifically based rationale for what we're doing, clients listen and engage more readily, particularly certain sorts of clients. And I have found that clients who have a lot of training and reward in being very linear thinkers, in being able to really look at the pieces and parts of things, tend to respond really well to what is basically a logical explanation as to why we're doing what we're doing. And I think this is, as information becomes more easily accessible and readily shared, I think this wanting to understand why are you doing that is becoming even a stronger desire in the marketplace. So I think this helps us both connect with new clients and helps them engage more readily. I'll give you just a little example of this, and believe me, we're going to go to the wizards in a minute, but I want to just give you just sort of more general example. I had a client, loved this guy. He was a former IT professional, very talented, very, very smart. And at one point we're coaching, and I asked him to check in with where he felt something in his body. and he was actually a coach as well, and he said to me, he said, oh, he said, I forgot to tell you, those kind of questions don't work for me. And I thought, oh dear, okay. and I said, okay, well, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why I'm asking you that. It's not just some weird thing or some optional thing. That's what I'm thinking. I didn't say that to him. I didn't want to be rude. But I said, here's the interesting thing about the body, and there's a whole lot more there. But I said, you actually have neurons in your heart and neurons in your gut. They travel, they give information to your brain through something called the vagus nerve, and they are constantly, the traffic is constantly going to your brain to tell your brain what's happening in your body, and some of that is insight and awareness. So we want to think about your body as a part of your brain, not a separate thing from your brain. And what was lovely and wonderful is this gentleman said to me, oh, nobody ever explained it to me that way before. In that case, and he told me, I have butterflies in my stomach, and, you know, I'm noticing that I feel very unsettled, and he was able to go there because he knew why, and it wasn't just this weird thing. So that's just one example. If you want a wonderful, comprehensive view of what the heck is happening in the body and how it is part of your brain. One of my favorite books right now is called Your Body Is Your Brain by Amanda Blake. So we're not going to talk about the body today, but that was an example of giving the scientifically based rationale and getting this guy into a wonderful, deep, rich coaching session that included his body. And that's my third point. When they engage like this, we can go further and deeper with the coaching, and we can impact the client and their organization if they work in one more profoundly, when we can really get in the door through this kind of example and this scientifically based rationale. The more people of various backgrounds we can reach, the more we grow as a profession, the less limited we are. We're not, as we say, preaching to the choir. But we're bringing people in and using coaching. And I think we're seeing this more and more. And I think we're becoming more and more sophisticated as coaches. And I'm super excited about that. But for me, that's a big piece of why do I bring neuroscience into coaching? Because I think it really helps us connect more broadly and more deeply when people really understand and when we understand what we're doing. And the last thing I'm going to say sort of about this general sense of things is that somebody said to me when I first started studying neuroscience, and I was really excited about it, and I wanted to bring it into some corporate thing we were doing together, and she said, you know, I think what I really notice about this and your studies of neuroscience is it's just made you so much more confident. And I've never forgotten that. And I thought, you know, absolutely, absolutely. The more I understand about what's happening, the more I'm engaged in, let's go there. Let's do this. This is going to work because I understand how it's working. Like the wizard behind the curtain. So I think there's the breadth of who we can reach, there's the depth of where we can go, and there's the depth of confidence in ourselves when we really know what's going on. So today, all of that having been said, it's a big frickin' topic. It's a huge area. People are constantly saying to me, like, okay, Anne, what's the one book I should read? And I have to, it's like if you saw me now, you would see that I'm rubbing my forehead because my answer is always, oh my God, there isn't one book. You should see my bookshelves. There isn't one book. It depends on what you're interested in. Are you interested in organization? Are you interested in meditation? You know, what are you interested in? So whenever I do like an hour and a half or an hour presentation, I have to pick one little sliver. So today's sliver of neuroscience, putting the wizards to work, are these two fascinating networks in your brain. And this is what, one of the things that's really cool about this is this in particular, this understanding of the brain is actually younger than coaching. Although, as you'll see when we get to the tools, we've been doing it. We just didn't know why, like much of what we're doing in coaching. So this is about 15 years old, and it is the understanding of something called the task positive network and the default Mode Network. Those are not my names. Those are the neuroscience names. You can look them up on Wikipedia or anywhere that you want to if you're interested in. They are associated networks in the brain, and they link us to things like self-reflection, daydreaming, working by not working, as Terry said beautifully in the introduction, linking, being and doing, and productive focus and attention. Each of these things is is somewhat in a different network. So we used to, the neuroscientists, the background of all of this is that the belief up to a certain point is that if you weren't actively doing something or thinking about something, that your brain was sort of flatlining. That used to be what they thought. And with technology and functional magnetic resonance imaging in particular, what they started seeing is that when people weren't like figuring out a problem or making a to-do list or solving a math problem, when their minds were wandering, the brain actually was consuming more energy. The brain is more active when we're not working on task than when we are. If I feel like I want to take like a big step back, like holy mackerel, that's amazing that our brains are at work all the time. And part of that is we're using that. We're thinking about something, you know, and I think about, you know, I'm putting together an agenda and I'm timing things out and I'm trying to figure out how long do I talk about this and when do I do questions and answers and, you know, what should I put on the slide and all of that. That's, you would see my task network very lit up, and I'll show you the distinctions in a minute. But then there's those times, you know, I'm going to go after I'm done today, I'm going to go take my dog for a walk out in the woods. And I'm going to try to leave my to-do list at home and just be in nature. And my mind is going to be wandering all over the place, but it's going to be working. And this is what we're going to explore today. So let me give you another beautiful quote. It's from a woman named Gina Greeley, and she said, "At times, productivity means doing nothing at all." And this is part of the magic that we're going to explore here with the Task and Default Network. But let's go a little deeper and unpack them. And let me tell you the aspects of each. And this, again, may be a place where you would love to have the slides so you don't have to write everything down. And if you didn't catch that at the beginning, if you just send me an email at ann@beaboveleadership.com, you can get my slides and has all this information. So the Task Positive Network, here are the sorts of things that it is in charge of when we're focusing on task. And this, by the way, is an this is not right brain and left brain. This is not a certain chunk of the brain. These are associated areas of the brain. So you want to think about these networks like two different strings of lights on your Christmas tree, if that's something that you have, or somebody else's Christmas tree if you don't personally do Christmas. But they're two different strings of lights. However, if you plug one in, the degree to which one gets brighter, the other one gets dimmer, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But this is a string of, and each little light on this string of lights is a different area of the brain, and they're in the right and left hemisphere. So the string of lights that is the Task Positive Network, the areas that it lights up are focusing on task, actively playing mindful attention, external, present. It's present moment in the task network. That's why you can get this feeling like when you're really working on a task and super engaged that you're in flow and time sort of stops. It's because you are actually in the present moment. It deals with goal orientation, reacting to and working with sensory information. What am I seeing, tasting, touching, feeling, smelling? You might have that in a meditation experience where you go through all of that, or I studied meditation and at one point we ate a raisin and, oh my God, paid attention to the taste and the texture and the feeling in our hands and the color. Wow, Total Task Network. I'm right there with that little raisin. Short-term memory, what they call working memory, the memory that is readily accessible. When I'm doing my agenda, I'm keeping these things I'm keeping these in mind, and I'm moving the pieces around. It's easily accessible right there. Planning and abstract reasoning. So all of that. People are often interested, and we are, by the way, I should have said this earlier, forgive me, we're going to have some time for some questions at a couple of points. One, partway through, after I'm done kind of talking about the aspects of these two networks, I want to give you a chance for some questions. Then we're going to talk about a couple of different ways they're used in coaching. I'm going to do a coaching demo, and we'll have more time for questions. So if you've got questions, write them down, because in about 10 minutes or so, I think we'll have some time, maybe sooner. So one of the questions that often comes up is, well, what happens in meditation? And I say it depends on the type of meditation you're doing. That example of me focusing on the raisin, or if I am doing this sort of meditation where I may start out with focus on where your breath is entering your body. In fact, take a moment right now and everybody just focus on where your breath is entering your body. That very point, doesn't matter, mouth or nose. Just pay attention to where you are taking in your breath. And notice the sensation. Notice the way you are either smelling or tasting or feeling your breath right now. Take another breath. Notice if there's anything different. Let your breath out and notice where it leaves your body. That's your task network. You're right now, your present moment, and we would see the string of lights related to the task network lighting up. One interesting thing that's different, and I'm going to go into default mode now in a moment, now that I have you all breathing. Maybe I just lost you. Maybe I lost you with the raisin and the breathing and all of that. The task network, here's the difference between, one of the many differences between task and default, two different strings of lights. Default mode network, when your mind wanders, you typically get the same. All the lights on the string tend to light up. In task network, different lights light up depending on what task you're doing, depending on what you're doing. So kind of an interesting difference there. But let's talk about default mode. Again, technical term. At one point when they first discovered this 15 years ago or so, when it really became clear, there were some hints about it way before that. Way back to the earlier part of the last century, that people kind of had the sense that I think the brain is working even when we're, you know, not working, but the real real clarity around it is probably about 15, 20 years old. At one point, they wanted to call it like the anti-task network, but what they realized, and I think one of the reasons it's called default mode, is that it clicks on the microsecond that we are not on task, the microsecond. You got no time in between. The moment that you are not doing something, the nanosecond you're not doing something, our minds start wandering and they go into this default mode. So it is the default of the brain. Now, I have had clients say to me, I think my default is task. And I say to them, well, you know, I get that. How I would word that is, I think your habit. If your dominant habit is to go to task. And we're going to talk about some of the limitations of each of these. But the default of the brain is to wander. And it is critical. It is absolutely critical. And here's why. So default mode network. And again, I have a slide of this. So if you're on SlideShare, you can see it. But it actually gives us dreaming, envisioning the future. It deals with what I heard one neuroscientist call mental time travel. So anytime if I ask you to remember, if you're in the U.S. and this is something that you support, you could remember what you were doing a week ago or so on Thanksgiving. Or is it 2 weeks ago? Maybe it's 2 weeks ago. On Thanksgiving Day and what was there and who was there. If you're not in the U.S., maybe remember what you were doing last summer. And, you know, a nice vacation. Maybe you went to the lake or you were just outside in a cafe on a beautiful day and you're remembering who was there and what was happening. That would be activation of your default mode. You're traveling in time. You're going backwards. Or if you're imagining the future, and we'll get more into this with the coaching tool, but if you're, you know, thinking, okay, 2019, I was saying to my partner the other night at dinner, I was saying, here is what I want to be saying to you next year. Next year as we're having dinner, I want to be talking about the book that I wrote this year. That's what I want. I want to be saying that, you know, it's almost done and I'm so proud of myself. Mental time travel. That's the default mode. I'm traveling. I'm imagining. That's what it gives us. It accesses part of what it's doing when it's so busy working and using all of this oxygen and calories and everything that it's using when our minds are wandering, is it's accessing long-term memory, not the working memory, not the short-term that's right there, you know, okay, what am I doing at 12:50 versus 1:15? This is the long-term memory. And this is one of the reasons why this part of our brain can give us such amazing inspiration. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. This is where we're able to really gauge others' perspectives, do what they call theory of mind, stand in someone else's shoes, look at the world through their eyes. So it's sort of mental, it's like traveling both in time and in body, I guess, and in person as you're imagining. It's also the place we think of ourselves, and some people believe it's the seat of the ego. This is where we construct ourselves, and it is one of the reasons it's using so much energy, and this is what they've been able to determine using fMRI technology, is it uses a lot of energy. There's a lot of blood flow going on in this place, is that it's organizing our brain. And so this mind-wandering place is pulling things together, and it does have some, that being said, it does have some limitations in terms of our own context, but it also has access to things that are not necessarily top of mind. It can, and this is a big word, it's the last bullet on my PowerPoint here, the big problem with the default mode network, and there is, I mean, all of these things sound really great. However, it can bring us into what is called rumination. And I think we've all, so think about a time, mental time travel, think about a time when you actually had too much mind wandering. It's like you didn't have enough to do, your mind was wandering, and it started taking you to a very bad place. And we can easily go from imagining what's possible to imagining this worst-case scenario and kind of go down the tubes, because this part of the brain can very easily lead us into depression. It kind of starts imagining what's not just what would be great about the future, but what could go wrong, and also what we're regretting about the past. So my belief about these two networks is there's got to be a way to we need to be aware of them and manage them, and I'm going to talk about that after we go into questions. So back to the image of the string of lights. Another way of thinking about this, and this is what I have on the PowerPoint right now, is I'm showing a picture of a teeter-totter or seesaw. Different areas of the world use different words, but the toy where one child sits on one end and one sits on the other. And this is what we know. They are, technical term is, they are anti-correlated networks. In other words, to the degree to which one is active, the other one diminishes. So the, as I was saying before, the other image is the light bulbs get really bright on the task network and the light bulbs get really dim on the default mode. Or to the degree to which your mind starts wandering, the task mode goes down and you end up in kind of in this other world where you're not paying attention to the taste and the shape and the scent of the raisin, but you're kind of off. And we've probably all had those moments where we've actually driven somewhere, you know, raise your hand, I'm raising mine, and forgotten how we got there. Because we were just in default mode the whole time, and we were paying enough attention to do it safely, but not that much attention that we actually remember it. So now think about, so driving, the last thing I'm going to say, and then we are going to go to questions here for a moment, but if we are, there are certain things that tend to kind of kick off the default mode network, and doing a repetitive task that doesn't require a lot of thought, like knitting or coloring or driving, showering, going for a walk, things like that where you're not super focused, will tend to kick off the default mode. That's very different than either if you're learning to drive, in which case it's all task mode. You are paying so much attention. I remember my son saying to me, okay, Mom, I'm coming to a stop sign. When do I hit the brakes? I mean, he was totally in task mode. He was paying attention, gripping the wheel, paying attention to everything. And I'm thinking, I have no idea. My body does it automatically. No idea when you hit the brakes. You know, I'm teaching him to parallel park. Okay, you start turning when you're at this point of the mirror and all of that. That's very task mode. And he literally said to me, don't talk to me about anything that doesn't relate to driving, because he needed to be focused on task to learn it. This is very true for all of us. If you're learning to knit, if you're learning to play a musical instrument, all of those things, they will require task mode until they come to a certain level of body memory and proficiency where it becomes automatic. And now, you know, I can go for a drive with him. We can talk about anything because it does not require his task mode. So that, and then it will probably kick off mind wandering and default mode as we're driving, as it does for many of us. So I want to, let me stay here, and I would love to hear any ahas or questions, and I think what you need to do is press 1 on your phone, and then Terry or Kathy will unmute you so that you can come on and either make a comment or ask a question before we go into the second part, which is, what do you do with this with your clients? I've got 3 different cool ideas, I think. So let's hear what folks have to say or ask.
Great. So if you have a question and you'd like to make a comment, go ahead and press 1 on your telephone keypad. Captivated the audience, and looks like everybody keeps wanting to go. However, I do have one question right here.
Go ahead.
Lucia, I think.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Hi, and I love your work. So,
thank you.
Thanks for sharing all your knowledge.
One question that I have is,
as a coach, we need to be present with our clients and at the same time with empathy. And so does it mean that both networks are switching on and off all the time?
I love that question. And it's a really, really good one. When we first learned about task and default, which is about 3 or 4 years ago, I was told it's one or the other, and it didn't make any sense to me because I thought it can't be unless I'm just a really good dancer. You know, am I just jumping from one side to the other? But the more recent research has said, if you think about this seesaw or teeter-totter, or the light thing, that you can be kind of more balancing in the middle. And I think of it as, if I'm working with my clients, that it's a little bit, I almost imagine myself sort of leaning. Like in a moment I may be looking at the time and realizing we have 5 minutes left and I need them to have a takeaway from this session, and I'm going to kind of lean into task and kind of get focused and make a plan. And then there's another time where they're going into something and I am feeling it. I might be tearing up with them, and I'm really leaning with them into default. But as a coach, I think it's one of the things that we learn is how to be really good, how to both sort of stand in the middle and know which way we need to lean. And I think newer coaches, sometimes they lean a little too far and they lose track of time and they got so into it with their client and the empathy that they got no forward movement. or coaches who struggle more with the empathy side may just be being very transactional. What are we going to do? What are you going to do? What's your plan? But really masterful, it's a really, really good point. We gotta lean on that teeter-totter without ever falling off. Does that make sense as I say that?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, great question. Thank you so much. Terry, any other questions coming up?
Sure, we do have a couple more. Linda, the N.
So the difference between the long-term and short-term memory, how does that work? Because it seems like there's a connection between short-term and long-term, but these are on different paths or different.
Yeah. Different, you know, and it's a really big picture, and I think we get into this whole piece about memory, and we have this, you know, we know this this sort of common knowledge, like why are our phone numbers 7 digits? Well, phone numbers are 7 digits because they figured out that most human beings can keep about 7 digits in working memory. You know, like we have that capacity. We can keep a certain number of items kind of like on the table in front of us. But if more pile on, we start, you know, the table can only hold so much. And that's considered working memory. And this is why, you know, I keep lists and things like that. I cannot keep all of my to-dos on the table in my working memory. I can probably keep like, you know, 3 or 4, oh my gosh, I have to do that today. But I was thinking about yesterday, I had scheduled a sample session with someone and completely forgot about it. And Google, bless your heart, Google Calendar, 10 minutes beforehand, ding, you know, you have a call. Okay, because even though I scheduled it, it wasn't in my working memory. May not have even gone into my long-term memory, frankly, which is why calendars and structures are so helpful. Longer-term memory, things get pushed somewhat to different places in the brain. And, you know, there's a whole more wonderful conversation around memory. And as I understand it, I used to think that my memory was like index cards or photographs like, oh, vacation 2017, here it goes in there. My understanding is it's not really how memory is stored. Probably all of the smells are stored together in the smell box. And there's another part of the memory that has more to do with kinesthetics that tends to go together, and emotions may be in a different place. And when we remember, we reconstruct all of that. So this default mode is kind of pulling things together. I think of the difference between what's on my table in front of me, working memory, and what do I need to go to the attic for and rummage around in the boxes. And the task mode is not particularly good at going to the attic of my brain and finding all of that, but the default mode is. And an example of this, Linda, and probably stuff is coming to you all even as I talk about this, but I do a lot of training. And I will sometimes say to myself, oh my gosh, what kind of process am I going to do? I want to make a game of this, and this just happened to me, and I couldn't think of, like, how do I make this fun? And I went for a walk, and this image came to me of the children's game Chutes and Ladders that I played with my son, like, maybe only a couple of times, and that was in my attic, and that came in through the default mode. It wasn't on my table, and I was like, okay, now. So I ordered a game of Chutes and Ladders. I'm waiting for it to come from Amazon tomorrow. And then my task mode is going to put it on the table and look at all the pieces and parts and say, okay, how do I make this into the kind of game I want to make it into? Does that answer your question? Does it help?
It's very interesting.
Yeah, is it sparking any ahas or ideas from you?
Yes, because I see people that have difficulty with one memory or the other, and then how to make those connect. And knowing that they're on different beams of light helps to explain some of this too. And I guess the question would be: is how do you cross that over?
Yeah.
How do you get that balance in the middle?
Yeah, and I have one particular idea for that. And that sort of is the core of when I talk about putting the wizards to work that we'll go to next. And even letting people, sometimes it's just so helpful to let people know that there's stuff that they've stored. We store it, you know, and my friend Mandy, who wrote The Body is Your Brain, she'd say we store it in our bodies. Most people that work with the body would say we store memory in our body. We store memory in smells. You know, we can activate it all these different ways, but there's a lot of stuff that's not on the table in front of us, but we do have it in our attic, and it could be useful. But you need the wizards to go look for that. So let me take one more question, and then I will get to the, well, how do you pull those together? So thank you, Linda.
Sounds great. Renee T?
One of the things that I noticed growing up, I was teaching myself to play the guitar when I was like in junior high school. And so I'd work on getting my fingers on the chords right, and I would find the next day I would play better. You know, that something was happening
yep.
in my brain.
Yep. Yep.
And I was remembering better. So I was wondering if you could speak to that.
I love that. Absolutely. And this has to do with sleep. That one of the reasons we need to sleep and why it's really critical for learning to sleep, and the research is so solid on this, is that the brain does a number of things while we're sleeping, and particularly in deep REM sleep, which is why most adults need, honestly, between 7 and 9 hours, and most adults in most of the world are sleep deprived because we're not getting all of that. But one of the things that happens is that the brain retraces relevant learning. So the neural pathways that you activated by putting your fingers on the keys that cued to you because you were emotionally invested in this and interested in it. So it cued your brain and probably getting some reward from it. So there's some chemicals that prime the brain up that this is important. That night, the brain kept that and retraced it. And another thing that it did is it got rid of stuff that you had not marked as relevant. So if you think about, if you even look around anybody, you know, in your room right now, you know, we're constantly like, look at all the stuff that's around you. Well, you're not paying attention, not actively paying attention to most of it. So the brain is going to get rid of a whole bunch of, basically it's like part of what we need to do when we sleep is take out the trash so that what's relevant can get strengthened and reinforced. So that's, yeah, absolutely really, really cool. I just saw an article that said that they did a study, and I didn't read it in depth, so forgive me because I'm probably going to not tell it totally accurately, but it was the little synopsis was fascinating, made a lot of sense. College students where they gave them one, they did just two different things. One group just, I think, got the normal amount of sleep they usually got during finals week. The other group, the one thing they said is make sure you get 8 hours every night. And regardless of how much each, I don't remember how much each group studied, if they studied the same amount, but the ones who got 8 hours of sleep every night totally outperformed the other group. So sometimes better to go to sleep. Great question. Sleep on it. Also, the other thing that happens, you know, and I remember my grandma would say to me, you're going to feel better in the morning, honey. Sleep on it. You feel better in the morning. The other thing the brain does is it organizes our emotional, you know, it sort of, you know, helps us figure out like the emotional thing that might feel so critical and important the night before. The brain kind of helps determine, is it really that critical or not? Now, there's an aspect of the default mode. Right now, we are not sure how much of the default mode is active in sleep. What it really looks like is you get a ton of default mode time right before you fall asleep and right when you're waking up. That it's both ends of that curve is really rich default mode time, which is one of the reasons why if you write down a problem before you go to bed and write down the first answer you get in the morning, it could be that your default mode has kind of come up with the answer, which sort of leads us into putting the wizards to work. So let me go there. Let me tee you guys up right now, and you can be thinking about this. I'm going to talk about a couple of different ways to put the wizards to work, and one of them is a coaching tool. And so I'm going to need a coaching client who's got a project where you feel a little stuck. That's the one of my favorite topics to use this coaching tool on. And I'm going to want a couple of options because we have to check sound quality, and sometimes we'll get somebody with an echo on the line, and I want a couple of options so that I can pick the best topic and have the clearest line. So be thinking about if you might be a good one, and we'll give you an option to raise your hand in a little bit. But let me talk about the two. This is how I explain this to my clients. And I explain this to my clients all the time because I think it is really good capacity-building information for them. So I will tell them, you have this is my metaphor. If it doesn't work for you, please find your own. It's not the be-all and end-all. I just kind of like it. Okay, I say, well, here's how your brain works. It's like you have two different teams. You have a team of engineers, and that's something called the Task Positive Network, if they want the technical term. And this team is really good for planning, budgets, to-do lists, paying very present attention, mindful attention in the present, consciously figuring things out. They are excellent at that. You can talk to them. You can tell them what you need. You know, oh my gosh, we need to do this PowerPoint and I need to figure out, you know, I need 10 slides that are going to help me do this thing. The engineers are on it. They are really good. They are not good. They have their limitations, and they're particularly not there. I don't mean to pick on engineers because I think there's a lot of engineers that are quite inspired, but this team in your brain, they are not good for inspiration, aha moments, out-of-the-box thinking, empathy, and introspection. They're just good for getting stuff done, and they're very useful, and you need them, and you probably use them all the time. However, you have another team in your brain, and it's a team of wizards. And you want to imagine this team like they live kind of underground, and they're very private, and they only work when nobody's looking at them. Because that's really how the default mode works. If you try to do a task in your default mode, you lose it. You have to let the mind sort of freely wander for it to really be the wizard quality. This part of your brain, this team, they are amazing. They will give you inspiration. They will give you aha moments. They will help you figure out how someone else feels about this. They'll help you figure out how you feel about something. And I've got a story about that in a minute. They will let your mind wander. And they will often give you the answer to things you cannot rationally figure out. So, but here's what they're not good for. They're not good for what the engineers do. Planning, to-do list, being present, because they tend to go past it. They look to the future and they look to the past. And consciously figuring things out, because it's a little bit like, I think of these guys as they kind of work in the dark, or they work down in their cave. And if you flip the lights on, it's like, you know, it's like all the mice run away, you know, all the wizards just run away. So they're not good for that. You got to just let them work on their own. And I'm going to talk about how to use this consciously. But I'm going to give you an example of Team Wizard for me. I think I've got lots of examples of Team Engineer, you know, okay, I've been telling you about that. I'm figuring out my timeline. That's the engineers. Plot this here. That will take 5 minutes. That means you can do this for 5 minutes. That's the engineers. So I talk a lot about my son. He's 22, and 4 years ago, I drove him out to school in Massachusetts. And as a single mom, his dad participated, but, you know, emotionally, it was pretty much me and him, and we're very, very close. And I drove him from Minnesota to Massachusetts to go to school. And, you know, this was, like, big. He's going off to school. He's an only child, you know, single mom. Dropped him off at school, hugs, pictures. I'm back on the road, and I'm listening to an audiobook and really enjoying it, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I don't actually know how I feel about this. How do I feel about this kid going off to college? And I sort of realized that as long as I was actively paying attention to this mystery story that I was listening to as an audiobook, there was no time for the introspection that I needed to really understand what does it mean to me that I just sent my kid to college and I'm on my own. And so I turned off the audiobook. I turned off the audiobook and the tears just started to flow. And this whole awareness of that I was in a new chapter and I was sad and he was in a new chapter, and this feeling of like, wait a minute, this isn't over. It's now we're just like, it's like the next book in the series. And what? Oh, that's how I feel about it. Sad and excited and on to the next adventure, and he's a character in my adventure and I'm a character in his adventure, and all of that came to me. But the wizards had to do that. The engineers, they're just listening to the audiobook, figuring out, you know, who killed the guy in the library. So we need that time to say, how do I feel? What meaning do I want to make out of this thing that has happened? So one of the ways, I want to talk about two ways to use this, and gets back to Linda's question, like, okay, how do we use this? And one of them is put the wizards to work. Talk more about that in a minute. That's what I did in the car, figuring out about how I felt about Noah. And the other is a coaching tool we call Crossing the River. So these are the two of the ways that I know. And there's kind of a part one and a part two to putting the wizards to work. So here's part one. This is working without working. This is in the U.S. we have something we lovingly call the Protestant work ethic. And I come from Minnesota, and this is strong. And this is that feeling or that saboteur that says, if I am not working hard and probably suffering a little bit, I'm from Minnesota, that something is wrong and I should be focused and working all the time. Realizing this, and realizing that sometimes the best way to work is to do nothing and let the wizards work. Here's what I started figuring out how to do. So part one is bring me inspiration. You command them. You basically, and this is for use off the call. This is not something you're necessarily doing on the call. Crossing the River, the tool, that'll be on the call. So here's what I do. I briefly describe the task in default mode to the client, two different networks in the brain. Often I'll just say, you have two different networks in the brain. One of them is when we're focused on task and getting things done, and one of them is when our mind is wandering. In the mind wandering part, you actually have access and the potential for huge inspiration. And usually people, if I ask them, you know, they'll say, oh, is that like the aha in the shower? Yeah, exactly. In fact, one of my students got a whiteboard for the shower, like a waterproof whiteboard, so she could write. I was like, that's brilliant, because, you know, you get that aha in the shower. Have them ask a question or set an intention to solve a problem and then do something non-work related. So in my story about the car, I was doing something non-work related. I was just driving, and I set an intention, and my intention was, basically, wizards, I want to know how I feel about my son going to college. I want to know how I feel about it. What does this mean? That's my intention. And then don't think about it. Just let it come. Now, in that case, it came very quickly. And often I find when I'm intentional about this, it does. I do this with my business partner all the time. We will get so focused, it's almost like our heads start to hurt, and we'll look at each other and we'll go, okay, we have been in task mode too long. Things start feeling a little dry and like tight, and we'll go shopping. That's our favorite thing, you know, bright, fun things, pay attention, ooh, cashmere, you know, feeling thing, you know, sensory information, all of that. I guess that's task mode. Anyway, we'll be out just sort of doing nothing, wandering around, doing a task that's non-work related. That for us is a fun thing, not for everybody, but for us it's fun and doesn't require a lot of focus. And in the middle of that, I'll turn to her and I'll say, oh my God, this is what we should do. Here's what just hit me. Remember that thing we did way back when we were working with, you know, this nonprofit? What if we changed that and did it here? And I know it's because the wizards brought me the answer, because I wasn't thinking about it. So you just see what the wizards have to offer when you just let go of it, but you ask a question, you set an intention. You can write it down, or you can just get clear in your own head. Because there is a problem with the wizards. And Putting the Wizards to Work Part 2, I call Stop That Nonsense, because these wizards can be a little naughty. So I've also found that this helps my clients. Again, I just did this yesterday with a client. Tell them a little mini bit about task and default. If they want to know more, you don't want to turn the coaching into a teaching session, but you can offer them a little information. If they want to know more, I've got stuff on my website, and I'll give you the links later, or they can just look it up, or you know, you can look it up later like that, but just enough to work with so they understand what's going on. And let them know that the default mode network has a tendency to take us into unproductive rumination, especially when we haven't given the wizards a job. So I had a client who was talking about just a lot of thoughts that were sort of sounding kind of like rumination to me. And she knew they weren't productive, and that she also knew they weren't really her. So I told her about that. And this is a particular if you've got a client who's sort of in this either regretting the past or worrying about the future thing, and that's the loop that they're in. The wizards have taken over, and they're not taking them anywhere good. They're doing their dark magic at that point. So either put the wizards to work by saying, hold on a minute, here's what I want you to work on. Work on, you know, give me 3 creative ideas for building my business that I've never thought of before. That's what I want you to work on, not this other stuff. Or actually do, and this one is sometimes when people are really in rumination, this is a better strategy, is put them into the task positive network. Okay, when you find yourself worrying about the future or feeling bad about the past, really do something that demands your attention. Not just an automatic thing like washing the dishes or doing the laundry, but something that requires real attention. It could be a hobby, it could be work, but you want to activate that task network because that task network does not do mental time travel. And they'll feel better. And the research, they did wonderful research on, a friend of mine worked in a lab that was focused on mind wandering. And they did a beeper study with people, hundreds of people all over the world. And they gave them pagers, and they paged them, and they basically said, what are you doing now, and how happy are you? And what they found is that there were 2 basic categories of happiness. One was either they were engaged in the task network, they were really focused on a task, and I will tell you, people were really happy when they were having sex. They're really present. They're like right here, right? I mean, you're like, they're present. Like, it's right now. I'm not doing mental time travel. I'm here with you. So I think that's probably why. So anyway, so there was that. But it was other things, by the way, that they were in the present moment, or when they were dreaming of a positive future, when they were looking at what was possible, both of those correlated to happiness. But when the mind was just wandering, they often were not, that was correlated to low levels of satisfaction and happiness. So this is a way you can really help your client kind of do a little brain self-management and develop some strategies for getting themselves out of this place that is just taking them. As I say, the wizards are doing their dark magic and they're not being very helpful. So you kind of have to, you can't watch them while they work, but you can boss them around a little bit. So I wish we had more time to ask questions about that right now. But if you do have questions about this, hang on to them, because what I want to do now is take you to one of my favorite tools, which is called Crossing the River. And I've got a slide up right now. It shows a river, and on one side it says TPN, and on one side it says DMN, and there's a bridge in the middle, and that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to put up the overview, and I'll run people through it. Let me give you the overview, and then we will get our options for coaching. So if you are, well, let me give you the overview first, and then we'll have you ring in. But I'm going to read, excuse me if you're looking at the slides, because I am going to read the slide for those that are not looking at them. So this is a wonderful coaching tool to help a client with a project or a plan. I did this as a demo up in Calgary. I was doing something for the ICF up there, and I coached this woman who was really, really accomplished, beautiful woman. And she was stuck in terms of writing a book. And we used this tool with her, and I'm not lying to you. She sent me an email this morning saying, I just sent the book to the publisher. She got what she needed to get unstuck. And she was really stuck. So super cool. I was so happy to hear that. And I was like, oh, my God, that's perfect because I can share it with ICFLA. Okay, so the step one, explain briefly about the two networks in our brain. It's often enough to simply name them, give a couple of bullet points about what they do, say that as one increases, the other decreases. Any coaching model that you use that works with the idea of doing and being. So CTI, we talk about co-active. I teach at the University of Texas, and we talk about thought and action. This is really the probably the most clear explanation of what is going on in the brain. Being and in the default mode, what does this mean? What do I care about? What do other people think? Others' perspectives, empathy, and then doing the task, what needs to be done. So you can talk about it. You can even just say you have a network that's more related to being and a network that's more related to doing. And you don't need, depending on the client, you may not need a lot more than that. Step two, you tell your client you're going to take them back and forth across the river between the two networks. And I always ask them where they want to start because it doesn't matter. So a little bit of background. I created this. I had just learned about task and default, and I was coaching a friend of mine, a friend and client, long-term client, who, very lovely, amazingly creative dreamer, and she wanted to get moving on a project. She said, I don't want to talk about any of that being stuff. I just need to get focused. And I knew that if all we did was like, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? How will I know? That the coaching would go really flat, and yet that was what she wanted. So I was like, okay, wait a minute, how do I give her what she wants, but also do what I know needs to be done? And so I just said, we're going to cross the river. We're going to go from this action to the being. We're going to go back and forth, and you can co-create with me how much time we spend on each side, and I promise you we'll spend as much time as you need to on each side. And that gave her the explanation that calmed her brain down so she didn't feel like I was just had this being agenda that she wasn't interested in. And so you just go back and forth as seems to be needed, and you use question and cues, and I've got these on the next slide, that sort of link to either side. And you can see if you're looking along, and I'll read you some of these, and then we're going to go into the actual coaching just in case you're just listening. But, you know, you're already doing this. So questions that activate the default mode are questions like, what's your dream? Where do you see yourself in the future? What's possible? What might be another view on this and somebody else's view on this? Questions on the task, what needs to happen next? What's a step-by-step plan? How can that become real? What's the tangible goal? What makes sense? And you can feel they also have a really different energy. You know when it's time to cross over from the default mode when it starts feeling swampy, like you're not getting anywhere. Dreaming is like kind of unrelated to current reality. The space feels full, and you might even get some anxiety. That's when you know you need to go to the task. You know it's time to cross over from the task side when the space feels dry or stale, and it's just doing, 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 and there's no joy, and you've lost the reason. And this is what happened with my client up in Calgary. She was just stuck on the task side, and she had forgotten why she was doing it. And so that's what got shaken loose in that coaching. She got reconnected to the why, which made the tasks, she was able to do the tasks with joy. Okay, so that's a brief overview. Let me see. If you press 1 on your phone, let's get a couple of options for the coaching. It'll be about a 10-minute coaching session.
Great. So we have the volunteers rolling in right now.
Okay.
Pamela.
I may. Go ahead.
Pamela. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. What's your topic?
It's my website. I'm stuck with writing it.
Speaking of publishing, it's sort of like similar in all of that. All right. Great. You know what? Just for sake of time, and because your line is very clear, and this is a very good topic, and you just got lucky enough to be the first, I'm just going to go with you. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds perfect. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So let me just ask you before we start, is there anything you need from me as your coach before we go into this very quick demo?
Just so you know ahead of time, I've been coached around it a lot, and I just don't do it. So I think, you know, whatever your magic is around the brain, you know, I could definitely use that.
No pressure, Anne.
Okay,
no pressure at all.
new client, next. Okay, well, we'll see. I am not promising you that the website's going to write itself after all of this. We're just going to hope there's some kind of insight. Okay, all right. Okay, my dear. All righty. So, all right. So let me do this with you as if you hadn't been on the call and you're my real client and I'm just going to explain. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I get it. I definitely get it for those kind of things. Here's what I'd like to do, Pamela. I want to tell you briefly, we've got these two different networks in our brain. Two different, they're literally, one of them kind of lights up and the other one kind of calms down. One of them is the one that helps us get focused on task. The other is the one that helps us focus on our vision and our dream and what we want. And what I want to do with you is imagine, if you will, and I'm wondering, are you in a place that you can stand up while we do this?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Perfect. Okay. So I want you to imagine that we're standing alongside a river. And on one side, it's going to be what we call the default mode. This is this dreaming side. Maybe this one's over on the right. And I want you to imagine this is like a beautiful garden with this winding pathway that goes along the river. On the other side of the river is the task mode. It's the same river, but this path is very straightforward, and there's not as many trees over here. There's a few trees, but they're in like concrete, and it's very lined up. All right? Kind of got a visual on the two sides?
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of doing your website, which side would you like to start on? Which one attracts you more?
The vision side.
Okay, let's go over there. Okay, so here we are. We're over in this beautiful garden. So, Pamela, in terms of your website, what is your dream?
The dream is to really attract the clients that to be really seen for what I have to offer and to be of service to my clients with that abundance that kind of I think that's the hard thing for me to really put it in words and copy what I stand for.
Ooh, well, what do you want? Do you stand? What is the impact that you really have to give?
I really want to support clients in creating lives they love. And it's really that, you know, when you came up with the garden, it's kind of that vision that their life can be so beautiful. They get up in the morning and they love what they're doing and they're fulfilled in their lives and they have beautiful relationships and just a very fulfilled inner world as well.
Oh, God, and I so hear your heart as you say that. I was going to ask if there was a metaphor, and I love this metaphor of life as a garden. Wow. Ooh, where would you like to be in a year?
I would love to have a full practice and work, you know, as a coach, but also do workshops and retreats.
And how do you want to feel?
I want to feel like I'm enjoying it, and I, you know, clients find me easily, and I actually have an impact, and I make lives better.
Mm. And how does that feeling stand? As we're standing here in the garden, like, how does that, what's your body want to do in this? They're finding me, I'm enjoying it. What's your body want to do?
Well, there are two things. One is like I want to open up my arms wide and just kind of I look upwards towards the sun and I'm happy and I might even kind of dance around, you know, kind of just be like so relieved.
I love this. Yeah.
Yeah, there's another part that just wants to lay down and, like, cuddle up and kind of hide and sleep.
Okay. Which one? Okay. Well, let's leave that for now. That's fine. So I want you to imagine there's a bridge. We've come to the end of this path for now, and there's more path up ahead. But for now, let's cross over to the bridge because the way forward is on the other side. So go over to the task side. And what's it? What needs to happen next?
I just really need to write that website.
Okay, but what part of it? Like, what little piece? Like, what one piece would be fun to write? Would be kind of cool.
The offer. The offer page would be fun to write.
What is the offer, and does the offer live over here on the task side, or do we need to go back to the garden?
I think it's already, it's maybe a mix. Part of it is already very clear and can already be on that task side, and part of it is still, I think what's holding me back is the niche part. I'm still not committing to that.
Okay, so come back. Let's try coming back over to the dream side because you got kind of an idea and it should be fun to write the offer. So imagine you're handing this offer to someone. Who is it?
It's a woman in her 30s, really ready for that beautiful garden life.
How do you know she's ready? What's she like? I mean, what's she wearing? What's she doing? How do you know she's ready? What are your cues?
She has these big, curious eyes where she wants more, where she's like longing for that sparkle, that magic in her life. And she has achieved a lot, and she has thought a lot, and she has analyzed a lot. But now she's kind of yearning for that connection and that... That intuition, like the reconnection to also the feminine and just to really be happy within herself.
I got huge chills as you're saying that. What's happening over there with you?
Yeah, I'm moved by that person. I really love her.
Oh, God, I get it. I've got an inspiration about something because we're over on the inspiration side, but I want to go to the there's another bridge, so cross over to the task because I've got an inspiration for something. And if it's not interesting, just push it away. What images might you find like that would really bring this to life?
Images.
Like from
clip
art, from Shutterstock. Yeah, for your website. Yeah, for your website.
Okay.
Like what? What could you physically put on your website that would just capture what you just told me?
It could be a picture of that woman. Just kind of catching that dreamy, kind of at the edge of still hiding, but it's stepping into her power kind of thing. Like there is a sense of everyone can see from the outside how powerful she is, but she's still kind of holding back. So that part could be somewhere in her glands.
Nice. Oh, okay. I want you to take a step forward that demonstrates, you know who you're talking about, by the way.
What's that?
You know who you're talking about, by the way.
Yeah, I'm giving.
Who are you talking about? What's that? Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. So on the task side, I want you to step into something that represents you stepping into the power everybody else sees.
Okay.
What are you stepping into?
I'm stepping into that vulnerability of really showing who I am.
And how can you make that real on your website? And what's the one thing you will commit to out of this coaching?
I'm gonna dare to really, really write to that person in a sense of not holding back and not editing out so it sounds professional or rational or really intelligent, so that it just, that it speaks to that person feels seen and heard and invited and welcomed just the way she is.
Beautiful. When will you do that?
Tomorrow I will write that.
How about tonight? can you do it tonight?
Yes, I can, actually. Yeah.
I don't usually push quite so much, but it feels like it's ready to come out.
Okay, I'll commit to doing it tonight. I actually have a window. Yeah.
Thank you. Will you send me an email and let me know?
Yes, I will do so. Thank you so much, Anne.
Thank you. You are so welcome. You are an amazing, beautiful, powerful client. I have one other suggestion, which is before you go to write, physically put your foot one side on the task network and one side on this straightforward part of the river and one side in the garden. Would that help?
Yes, that's a beautiful image.
Okay. This woman, whoever she is blessed and lucky to have you, and she's waiting for you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, that was wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Well, we have time for just maybe one or two questions, and then we're going to wrap everything up. So, Terry, is there anybody clicking in to say, well, I've got a question or a comment?
Yeah, let's give a minute. So, yeah, we have about 3 minutes. So go ahead and raise up your hand if you have something you'd like to add or say. Lisa Gillette.
Can I just say this technique of crossing the river is brilliant. I love what you did with some of the really basic NLP techniques from Bandler and the way you brought this together to move between these two very distinct networks. And I am going to use this technique with a client of mine who is so stuck, and I will give you full credit, and I'm going to work on it, and I'm signing up your email because just the way you did that, and I can't remember the name of the person you just coached, but she was so brave and courageous and vulnerable and has coaches, we all go through this with who is my ideal client and get the website up. And just to listen to this and what you've done with it, Anne, is brilliant. So thank you. Really brilliant.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And the one thing I want to say is you probably, thank you so much for that acknowledgement. It's really beautiful. This is a really rough structure. It's a very loose structure. And you can see I was doing embodiment. I was using my intuition. It's not rigid. You know, at one point in task, I might have been asking her something that maybe was default. At that point, it didn't matter. You know, so this is like a very loose structure for you to bring everything else that you have as a coach, sort of all your other things, and add
this
on.
That's just brilliant. And I love the way you're using somatics, too, to anchor that.
Yeah.
So smart. Yeah.
Thank you. I would say as I've gotten more into neuroscience, somatics has become less of an option and more always. It's almost always. Because I really so see that our brain is living throughout us. And if I don't use somatics, I'm ripping the client off is what I've come to decide. And interesting, I had Mandy Blake, who's really a leader in this conversation, on the ICF Advance, and we talked about, and one of the things we're talking about is in the next iteration of the ICF competencies, we need to demand that somatics are more highlighted than they are now. We need to demand that they're part of the ICF competencies. So if you have a passion around that, write to the ICF and let them know you want to see that, because I think we're ready. We need that in the profession.
I'm happy to do that, and it's kind of shocking that it's taken so long. But now with the growth of neuroscience and people in corporate are realizing, no, this works, and we need to pay attention to this teaching. I think, you know, whether you call it somatics or not, or being in your body, or where do you feel it in your body, how do you anchor it, I just am really appreciating what you've brought to this webinar today, because you're amazing. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I have just a minute or two. Again, and if you're watching the slides, this is up on the slides, that I have two real quick offers for you. One is, oops, and I went the wrong way, sorry. I wrote a book a couple of years ago on the neuroscience of the ICF competencies. It is on our site, which is beaboveleadership.com, and the actual link is This Is Your Brain on Coaching. If you scroll down, it's at the very bottom on the left-hand side. It's usually $15.95. You can use the code UTD, U Thomas David 5, for $5 off, and that's good through the end of the month. So it's a reference guide and I think it's great if you're trying to pitch coaching in an organization or write a grant or anything like that. It's also just fascinating. I was able to map neuroscience to all of the competencies and the subcompetencies. The other piece, real quick, is that we do this whole thing in person. We have an advanced coaching series called Neuroscience, Consciousness, and Transformational Coaching, where we look at coaching, we look at neuroscience, and we look at its relationship to human effectiveness and increased levels of consciousness or awareness. And it is fabulously fun, highly experiential, lots of somatics, lots of color and fun, and the learning goes really deep. We're going to be next year not in L.A. We tend to do L.A. every other year, but we'll be in San Francisco in 2019 in the spring. If those of you in California want to come up, we'll also be in Minneapolis, Toronto, Santa Fe, and Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I live. And for some reason, it didn't make it on here, but if you mention ICF, if you email me and tell me you're on the webinar, I'll give you $200 off the current price. And there's early bird pricing on all of that. And I apologize, I meant to put this on here. So you just email me. And again, email me if you want the slides, Ann@beaboveleadership.com. And then if you want to talk about our advanced coaching series or sign up for it, just let me know you're on the ICFLA webinar and I'll give you $200 off. Thank you, guys. And Pamela, thank you for your wonderful clienting. It was wonderful. And thank you all for all of the great questions. I wish we had time for more. And thanks, Terry and Kathy and Gay, for organizing and hosting and setting this up.
Great. Thank you, Ann. Wonderful job. Wow. Really, really engaging and inspirational. Thank you so much for all of the love you put into this and all the love you give to ICFLA. So really appreciate it. Thank you. Again, thank you, Kathy, for taking care of Maestro, and welcome, Gay, as our new director. And thank you, audience, as always, for being here. Over 100 of you showed up today during the holiday season. I know it's really hard, so thank you so much for taking the time and being present. It's a great turnout today. So without you, the virtual chapter would not exist, so keep showing up. It's great to connect and learn together. I invite you all to join the ICFLA on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, to share your thoughts and ideas about today. You can also find the social media links on the ICFLA.org website. This completes our ICFLA teleclass for today, Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Have a great rest of your day.